Yes.
You know, the more he or she wants to get closer to the beloved one, he observes lots of things, you know, to make the beloved one happy, to gain proximity to the beloved one. Yes. So those things that he observes, it is enjoyable. It is something like pleasure for him, like enjoyment for him or her. That is why this, let's say, limitedness or let's say these restrictions that sometimes we have, we face in the holy month of Ramadan, it should be enjoyable if it is with good intention. You know, sometimes you put some restrictions on yourself without any reason. Yes. Irrationally, you know, without reason. So, of course, that would be like a hardship, like difficulty, like will be really tiresomely, really botheringly, really bothersome, we can say. But if it is with good intention, of course, it would be enjoyable. It is not something that, what we can say, bothers you or annoys you, you know?
Yes, that's all right.
The month of Ramadan is more significantly about turning to myself. What have I done for myself? What am I going to achieve in this holy month of Ramadan?
A lot of you will find yourself saying, oh my God, I can't do this or say this because I'm fasting. Why can't you export that outside of the month of Ramadan? This is why these 30 days are training grounds for us. They're springboards for us. And so we have to use these tools that we have in front of us to achieve that perfection, inshallah.
Who is hosting you? Get to know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As-sawmu li, there is a hadith Qudsi. As-sawmu li wa ana ujzabe. God says, fasting is for me and I am the reward of it. Some that read this hadith, wa ana ujzibe, I reward for it, that's even good. And God, the generous, will not reward less than paradise. But here we can read it in a different way, that God says, I am the reward of it.
Still, the main purpose of the holy month of Ramadan, beside spiritual purification, is the bodily purification, as you said too. This thirst and hunger will help the Muslims in order to somehow feel the hard and difficult situations of the hungry and the thirsty all around the world. But some etiquettes have to be observed too. For example, if we are fasting for 15 hours, we cannot make up for that from the time of iftar up to suhoor, you know. I mean, from the time of iftar also to suhoor, we have to be fasting somehow too. Maybe in terms of bodily one, we are not fasting, but spiritually we are still fasting, isn't it, Sheikh?
Yes, you know, fasting has different levels.
Yes.
Or layers, we can say. The one of this level is this, that you do not eat and do not drink. But it doesn't mean that fasting is only not drinking and not eating. Because in the holy month of Ramadan, not only in the holy month of Ramadan, in the rest of the months as well, you have to fast by your eyes. You have to fast by your ears. You have to fast by your, for example, tongue. You have to fast by your mind, your brain, your mouth, your hands, your legs, your feet, everything. What does it mean? It means that you should not see and watch the haram things.
Yes.
You should not listen to haram things. You should not hear haram things. You should not say haram things, you know?
Yes.
You should not taste haram things.
That's right.
You should not go haram places. You should not, for example, do haram things with your hands, with your body. You should not think about haram things. You should not imagine haram things in your brain, in your mind, you know?
Yes.
The fasting has different levels. The and the higher level of fasting, all these things that I mentioned,
that's right.
All of them should be observed. A yes. true fasting Muslim is yes. the one who observes all these things in the that's holy right. month of Ramadan.
Especially this holy month of Ramadan, we see the massacre and the genocide that is taking place in Israel and in Gaza Strips. You know, the Israeli and the Zionist regime attacks the people. So many innocent children are just after a piece of bread, a drop or a glass of pure water to drink. You know, this is really a hard, difficult situation. So this Ramadan for the Muslims must be very much different, Shaykh. I mean, just feeling the hardships and the difficulties that the children of Palestine are going through, I think must be felt by the Muslims too all around the world. At yes, least sharing yes, some yes, of your course. Food or money or, we yes. can say, charities with them.
You know, oppression is always bad.
Yes.
You know, it's not only for only Muslims. No, for Muslims, Jews, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, even atheists,
yes.
secular, let's say, whatever kind of characteristics you have, you know that oppression is bad.
Yes.
Killing innocent civilians, killing innocent kids, children, you know, yes. men and women, old men and women. Innocent civilians, it is an oppression.
Yes.
Makes no difference whether it is performed by Zionist, non-Zionist, Muslim, non-Muslim, whatever. So that's why it is it's a kind of universal value mm-hmm. in which all the people across the globe, from across the globe, believe in. That is why I think we have to know that self-controlling, one of the kind of self-controlling is that we should control ourselves not to commit oppression.
That's right.
Not to oppress the innocent people, particularly when it comes to these children, kids,
that's right.
innocent old men and women, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, oppressing on them is a major sin that we should not commit.
That's all right.
Particularly in this holy month of Ramadan.
That's all right. And we must know that fasting during Ramadan is not only for controlling, we can say, that's right, our stomach, our bellies, or something like that. If you are hungry and thirsty, of course there will be rewards, but the true fasting is about those people who all organs of their bodies are fasting, including their mind, their intellect, what's happening in their brain, you know. This is also a type of fasting for the people. And as I said, you know, you are hungry and you are thirsty, but at the time of iftar, you must also, when breaking your fast, you must also control your belly, control the food input, isn't it? At least try to be, that's right, generous during this month with helping the poor and helping the needy. And there are so many purposes behind the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani. It was very kind of you. Nice elaboration on the concept of fasting during the holy month of Ramadan. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, please visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Salman Qasimi, an Islamic school teacher, says it's an unprecedented move in India to ban madrasas instantly, calling it a blow to marginalized Muslim families across India's most populous state of Uttar Pradesh. He says lives of thousands of families are directly dependent on such institutions, while the government of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi accuses them of receiving illegal funding. Scholars argue such institutions are building blocks of Islamic teachings across the country, which regular schools can't do.
This judgment is unfortunate. We respect the court decision, but we oppose it. Our constitution allows us to have such schools to teach Islamic values to future generations. If this is against secularism, why it was made in the first place? Every citizen can read, write, promote or propagate their religion. That's what our constitution says. Madrasa's instant closure is a blow to livelihood of thousands of families.
In January, the government of Uttar Pradesh state halted a funding program for madrasas, leaving more than 20,000 teachers unemployed. Scholars say Friday's verdict applies to all Islamic schools in the state that are privately and government funded. In recent months, India's northeastern state of Assam converted hundreds of madrasas into conventional schools.
All the laws and all the things which are BJP is enacting or BJP is targeting the Muslim community, definitely they think that if they want to rule the country, so they can rule the country when they can demonize Muslim community, they can suppress Muslim community, they can make them wetless at the time of election. So all these efforts are taking place because of the RSS background, RSS agenda of the present ruling party.
In recent months, Modi's government turned down new proposals from the states and halted payments to schemes that would finance Muslim schools. Critics say this amounts to snatching the livelihood of thousands of families instantly, while they have no other means of earning.
India will hold general elections in a few weeks' time, and the BJP's victory is imminent, according to observers. Activists and rights groups have accused the governing party of promoting anti-Islamic rhetoric in a deliberate attempt to appease the majority voters by polarizing the voters, therefore using divide and rule policy to win the elections.
Rights groups have accused the BJP government of persecuting and intimidating Muslims through all possible means. The accusation BJP rejects, saying India is a vibrant democracy enshrined in equality for all. Critics accuse the ruling party of systematic repression against the largest minority group, including hate crimes, mob lynching and cow vigilantism amid rising Islamophobia. Observers say such issues pave the way for Prime Minister Modi to remain in office for a third consecutive term. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Pakistan has joined the global celebrations of a very special Nowruz that has coincided with the holy month of Ramadan. Nowruz, which translates to New Day, is celebrated by millions of peoples worldwide as the Persian New Year, symbolizing rebirth, renewal, and arrival of spring.
To all my fellow Pakistani, let's cherish our cultural diversity and come together in solidarity. May this new year bring us prosperity, peace and happiness.
Despite its Persian origins, Nowruz in Pakistan is celebrated with a distinctive local flavor, incorporating regional traditions and customs. Pakistanis have their own customs to welcome Nowruz. Besides preparing special meals and decorating the dining area with special dried and fresh fruits, the ancient occasion also creates an opportunity for individuals to mend broken ties, forgive others, let go of the past, and build stronger relationships in the coming new year.
For me, Nowruz is a time of reflection and renewal. It's a reminder to leave behind the past year's troubles and embrace the opportunities that lie ahead. It's a celebration of life, growth, and the beauty of nature.
We clean our house, we visit our friends, we celebrate this day, we enjoy a lot of festive foods, and you know, this day brings a lot of joy and happiness in our lives. So, happy Nowruz to all of you.
Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari and Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif have extended their heartfelt greetings to all those who are celebrating Nowruz in Pakistan and around the world. Both leaders also called for embracing the spirit of Nowruz and promoting the message of peace, compassion, unity, and kindness.
Nowruz signifies regeneration at the start of a new cycle. It transcends simple festivity, standing as a cultural landmark that enhances the diversity of human society. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
After weeks of silence, Kitab Hezbollah Resistance Group, one of the biggest units within Iraq's popular mobilization units, reminds the government, as well as officials in the committee tasked with overseeing the withdrawal of U.S. military, that they should not grant immunity to the occupying forces, or else gates of hell will open.
These foreign forces have been violating our sovereignty for years now. In January 2020, Donald Trump ordered the assassination of our anti-terror commanders, Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad airport. And lately, they are violating it by assassination of Iraqi resistance commanders.
Kitab Hezbollah also warned that any removal of leaders of popular mobilization units must be decided by the PMU internally. It says acting otherwise would be a significant mistake.
Our government has made it clear on multiple occasions that the need for U.S. military forces have ended. Our security forces are capable of running the country's security system and face any threat. Washington is clearly trying to rally around the negotiations, and it is a clear attempt to delay their withdrawal from the country.
In January, the Iraqi resistance decided to halt the attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The attacks were started on October 19 in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Observers say that the suspension was to allow a climate of serenity for talks between Baghdad and Washington over the U.S. military presence. But as some have rightly noted, Washington has no intention to change its behavior in Iraq.
It is obvious that Washington is trying to gain more time to keep its military presence in Iraq. Our government needs to push forward and speed up the pace of negotiations to end the presence of these foreign forces and save our country's political, economic, and social stability.
On paper, the U.S. military forces are present in the country for advisory purposes, as well as training the Iraqi forces to fight Daesh terrorist group. However, in practice, the U.S. forces have shown a different objective by violating Iraqi sovereignty, attacking PMU positions, and killing top Iraqi commanders. Since the start of their operations in October, the resistance in Iraq has been pushing the government to end the U.S. military presence in the country. Also, they have time and again reiterated their solidarity with Palestinians. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack, as he declared March 24, a National Day of Mourning. At least 11 suspects, including four perpetrators who directly participated in the shooting spree, have been arrested. The four direct perpetrators were detained in Bryansk region. According to the intelligence service, the terrorists planned to cross the Russian-Ukrainian border. The Russian president vowed to punish all involved in the massacre.
All the perpetrators, organizers, and customers of this crime will suffer fair and inevitable punishment, whoever they are, whoever guides them. I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity. This attack on Russia, on our people.
The Daesh Takfiri terror group claimed responsibility, but Moscow has dismissed the claim, asserting that investigation is still underway to ascertain the main culprits. Russia's security service says the Moscow attackers had contacts in Ukraine supporting them. During interrogation, a detained terrorist said he was promised 5,000 rubles to carry out the terrorist attack. He claimed he watched a certain preacher on Telegram and allegedly his assistant contacted the man.
The perpetrators are ignorant, illiterate people who will commit any crime for money. The question is different. Where is the planning center? Not a single international organization can act in the international arena, especially in a state like Russia, where there are strong power structures. Performers can be found anywhere through their agents. We went through this experience in Chechnya. This once again convinces us that international terrorist structures are the work of the CIA and Western intelligence services.
The attack, which came amid Ukraine's war with Russia, was the deadliest in the country since the Beslan school siege in 2004. After Friday's attack, Putin held discussion with his Belarusian counterpart Alexander Lukashenko. Both leaders confirmed their readiness to work together in the fight against terrorism.
In his address, President Putin said Moscow attackers were preparing to flee towards Ukraine, where a window had been prepared for them with the help of Ukraine. Now it remains to be seen how Russia is going to react to the massacre, which came in a very volatile region and amid its war against Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Syrians used to say, no one sleeps hungry, but that was 13 years before the devastating terrorist war that was waged upon them, the war that has pushed many Syrians below the poverty line. Saïd is an association that has been helping these people by providing daily meals to the needy during the fasting month for over a decade. Despite the increasing challenges, they are determined to continue with their mission.
We're currently operating a kitchen called Hunger Be Gone. Unfortunately, our resources this year are less than previous years due to the circumstances the country has been through, such as the earthquake disaster that drained a lot of financial resources. We distribute around 200 to 250 meals every day to the people who come to the association, while our motorcycle team also delivers meals to remote areas.
As a chef, I start every day at 9 a.m. by preparing the water and cooking the chicken for the scheduled meal. I have been volunteering for 5 years to help my fellow countrymen in these difficult circumstances.
Syrians have demonstrated their sense of responsibility in various ways during this crisis, particularly during the month of Ramadan. The Holy Month of Mercy encourages people to be selfless and to help alleviate the sufferings of others. Voluntary work is one of the ways through which Syrians showcase their contributions to society.
So we are here not only to donate financially, but to donate our time more specifically. Volunteering is something very important, especially for our generation. We need to teach people that giving doesn't always mean that you need to take something in return. So we're here to volunteer with our time, to try to help people as much as we can. So Saïd Association is our vessel to do that.
Today we came to make meals for the people in need. First we cut the vegetables, then we shredded the chicken, and now we are cooling down the rice and the chicken. Then we're gonna put it in boxes and give it to people in need.
Despite the United States' theft of their resources and the inhuman sanctions imposed upon them, which have put Syrians in dire living conditions, they steadfastly hold on to their love for their country, united against all the odds. They strive to find their way through this dark tunnel towards the dawn of a brighter life. Syrians have always firmly stood together, not only against terrorism, but also in the face of unjust Western sanctions, through voluntary initiatives that show their love to each other and to their homeland. Ibrahim Wahid, Damascus.
Since the Al-Aqsa flood operation and the Israeli genocidal aggression against Gaza began early October last year, Hezbollah has taken a stance of defense against Israeli military targets near Lebanon's southern border. Now, months later, a propaganda campaign has been launched against such efforts, with social media posts and bulletin boards across the Lebanese capital Beirut and beyond reading slogans such as "Implementing international resolutions enhances stability" or "Lebanon does not want war."
If you asked all Lebanese whether they would want an Israeli war to begin in Lebanon, the unanimous response would be no, especially with decades of experience with the Israeli regime and its disproportionate targeting of civilians. Yet what seems like a simple billboard has deeper implications for a country like Lebanon.
Experts tell Press TV that certain groups in Lebanon have launched this campaign to put people against the resistance at a time of war. But are these factions working alone?
This campaign, we can say that it doesn't represent the Lebanese people. And especially in that it is, and we have informations, it is funded by foreign countries.
Those parties and those factions, they were controlled by the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. The U.S. Ambassador, Dorshi Shea, as she was departing Beirut and also receiving her successor, Lisa Johnson, they were working on this in a way that would, help Amos Hochstein and his pressures put on Lebanon.
Hochstein, who is an Israeli-American businessman and lobbyist, has gone back and forth from Beirut to Tel Aviv in attempts to stop the resistance operations, without any mention of an end to Israeli violations of Lebanon's rights, which have persisted for over 17 years.
By supporting the resistance in Gaza or in Palestine, the resistance in Lebanon have prevented war. It didn't start the war. And especially when the Lebanese people and the Palestinian people and the Iraqi people and all people in the world are not protected by the international decisions.
Some people inside Lebanon, they are working as agents of the Americans and the Zionists, unfortunately, trying to accuse Hezbollah and the resistance of false things, misinformation, though it is crystal clear that the resistance is trying to protect Lebanon.
With growing popular support and despite the pressure from foreign and domestic sides, Hezbollah has been adamant on proceeding with its support of military operations as long as the Israeli onslaught against Gaza continues. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The celebration of Nowruz and the arrival of the Persian year of 1403 was held at the Rome residence of the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Italy, a well-laid aft-seen table bearing seven auspicious items starting with the letter S was put out as the guests, mostly Iranian expats and Italians, were welcoming the first day of the new year and the arrival of spring.
Nowruz is much more than a tradition, it is a culture. Nowruz symbolizes the victory of good over evil, the balance of the spring. Nowruz means to lay all grievances aside and to celebrate family ties and friendship. Nowruz is a time for peace and reconciliation. It is a time for cleaning our homes.
The embassy's Nowruz celebration ceremony included a feast of Iranian food, followed by vibrant traditional music. Millions of people across the world celebrate Nowruz and its traditional rituals that emphasize the values of peace, solidarity, and goodwill towards all. 25,000 Iranians currently residing in Italy are among those who celebrate the Persian New Year.
I'm from Tehran. I've been living in Italy for 40 years. Even though we are far away from our homeland, we were all waiting for the Nowruz celebrations. It's really important for us because that's where our roots lie.
Io sono Gaudia, sono italiana.
My name is Gaudia and I'm Italian. I've been married to an Iranian man for 49 years. The Nowruz tradition has become a part of my life. I love celebrating nature and renewal in nature, and I'm proud that I'm passing on this wonderful tradition to my grandchildren.
People at the gathering share the same belief that it is important to embrace Nowruz's universal message of renewal and unity, and that its celebration is also an opportunity to reflect on the past year, nurture new hopes, and celebrate the continuous cycle of life. Max Civili, Rome.
Hundreds of people have engaged in a 41-kilometer pilgrimage, symbolically depicting the length of the Gaza Strip and a trek that scores of Palestinians have been forced to make due to the U.S.-backed Israeli campaign of genocide against them. The event has been organized by a collective of Christian bodies. The organizers say it is important to demonstrate that Christian Zionism does not represent them.
The church has been very complicit within this genocide and within Palestinian suppression more generally, and because of that is not condemning what they're doing, is not recognizing what they're doing as ethnic cleansing and genocide, and not speaking out. And we wanted to challenge that narrative and challenge that stance and show an expression of solidarity, show that that's not the only thing coming out of the church.
The demonstration also coincides with South Africa's commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre, when the apartheid regime gunned down 69 protesters in what is recognized as a turning point in the struggle for liberation. For those who participated, the Palestinian suffering resonates deeply.
And what I saw today in my own, as I walked, you know, because it's a pilgrimage, reflecting, I said to myself, I feel my feet, you know, burning. I feel this old legs not moving as it should. But it's nothing in comparison what people are experiencing.
The South African public is still asleep, and they must start waking up to see what Israel is doing. But what they do there, they can also come and do anywhere else in the world.
I'm a proud Jew. I'm not a Zionist, and I never have been. And I think that what the Netanyahu government is doing is actually a moral genocide. Whether they call it illegal, I don't know whether it fits legally, but it's morally a genocide. And I'm appalled. I'm heartbroken. As somebody who's lived through apartheid, we have seen this before. We should know better.
The Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage coincided with the somber Christian period of Lent, and sacrifice and resilience were recurring themes pilgrims pointed to as they attempted to symbolically walk in the footsteps of Gazans. The Gaza ceasefire march is another example of the human resolve for justice, and as Palestinians endure the latest Israeli aggression for almost 6 months now, the people of the world will only intensify their commitment for Palestinian liberation. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Shaima al-Sawaf is one of hundreds of families across Gaza partly or entirely wiped out by the Zionist regime bombardment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East I wrote, the life of Shaima al-Sawaf was turned upside down in an instant. The 30-year-old, who has lived in Jordan since her marriage in 2013, lost 50 members of her family after an Israeli regime missile weighing hundreds of kilograms struck their home in Gaza. The al-Sawaf family is one of hundreds of families in the Gaza Strip that have been partially or wholly wiped out by the Zionist regime's bombardment of the enclave since October 7th. Last summer, Shaima visited her family in Gaza. She spent weeks with them as if she was saying goodbye without knowing it. Among those killed were her father, Mustafa, her mother, Maha, her brothers, Mahmoud, Montasser, Marwan, and Ahmad, her nieces and nephews, Bara, Maha, Karam, Shahad, and Omar, her sister-in-law, Zain. Omar was the youngest at only 18 months old, while a number of her uncles, cousins, and their wives also lost their lives. The bad news arrived quickly. Hours after the bombing, Shaima was able to call her cousin, who continued to cry bitterly down the phone. Shaima's husband took the phone and spoke to him, then fell silent, ended the call, and tears began to flow down his cheeks. "I went crazy. I lost my nerve. I started screaming. Tell me who among them died," recalled Shaima. She said, "He said desperately, all of them. I had a nervous breakdown and didn't feel anything around me after that." More than 31,000 Palestinians have been martyred in the ongoing Zionist regime's assault, while more than 71,000 have been injured, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. 40 days before the start of the Zionist regime's assault, Shaima left for her home in Amman. When she met her husband, a refugee from Jaffa, and left Gaza, she felt that she had left a piece of her heart behind. But she remained in daily contact with her family for hours, following their news and sharing their events from a distance. She said, "The war began with a constant anxiety inside me. I could barely sleep, and I watched the news and the sights of the Israeli bombing, which didn't differentiate between man, woman, child, elderly, sick, and wounded. If I hadn't left, if I had stayed and died with them." With the beginning of the Israeli regime airstrikes, Shaima's long calls to her family turned into short words just to make sure they were okay. The family left their home in the Sheikh Ajlin neighborhood when the bombing intensified and moved to a residential building in At-Tofa area where Shaima's uncles live and where her father also had an apartment. At dawn, on November 18th, Shaima read the news that a residential building had been targeted in the same area. She was terrified and started crying while trying to contact her family, but no one answered. She said, "My anxiety and fear increased. My husband tried to calm me down, but I felt a disaster was approaching. Communications were cut off from Gaza and I knew nothing. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I did nothing but pray and cry." Due to the lack of facilities and the imposed siege, the civil defense crews were unable to work effectively at the site of the bombing. The whole family was struck under the rubble and were extracted dead, except for Zaid, aged 8, the son of Mahmoud, who was killed with his wife and the rest of their children. Shaima describes what happened as an unforgettable tragedy. Little by little, the news began to reach Shaima. The next day, she received word of the survival of her brothers, Montasser, Marwan, Mu'taz, and Muhammad, who were injured. Montasser, her journalist brother, who lost one of his eyes in the bombing, called and began to console her and reassure her about him and the rest of her siblings who had survived. She said, "I continue to cling to the hope that a number of my siblings had survived, despite my intense pain over the loss of my parents and my nephews. I spoke every day with Marwan and Montasser, and I didn't know that these were farewell calls to them as well." On December 1st, an Israeli regime plane bombed the Al-Daraj neighborhood in Gaza City, killing Montasser, Marwan, and a number of other relatives. Montasser remained bleeding for about half an hour without any ambulances being able to reach him. Rayyan 10, one of Shaima's three children, sits in his room in Amman and cries hard. Shaima said, He loved his cousins very much and talked to them constantly. He had a special relationship with my father. I'm still in pain like the first day of the massacre. I talk to their pictures and imagine them next to me. The most painful thing for Shaima is that she couldn't look at them one last time before burying them because of the war and siege. She said, "Gaza is everything I love, and it has the smell of my family and their memories," adding she hoped to return one day. Shaima is left with only her two brothers, Motaz, and the injured Muhammad, who needs to travel for treatment but still can't. She talks to them daily, and they try to heal their wounds together by remembering the family members, amid constant fear due to the continued Israeli regime aggression. Before the war began, due to a glitch in her phone, Shaima lost her photos of her family and was unable to recover them. She said, "I got very angry and cried more. I want to look at them again, but I don't have all the pictures. Our first house was completely bombed and turned into rubble, and all my brother's phones were crushed by that." Today, Shaima lives a severely diminished life. Despite everything that has happened, she says that she's still waiting for one of them to contact her, even if the wait is forever.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, once more, I am honored to be here. And this is Asma. Well, I'm not alone. I have a co-host in here, Brother Mustafa.
Assalamu alaikum. So happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's always happy to be in Youth Station. Well, one of the interesting part of the holy month of Ramadan is the gatherings that happen, the invitation of your friends, of neighbors, of whomever that is going to invite you for foods for the time when you're going to break your fasting. So it's very fascinating because of many reasons. Like, you're going to be gathered together, you're going to meet the people you haven't been able to meet for a long time. And then the food, of course, because they're going to be so creative in the kind of the food they're going to offer. And the entire concept of all of you going through the same thing and then breaking your fast together is an interesting thing. Like, to eat food together with your neighbors, with your family members, with your relatives is a recommended thing in our religion, which is going to happen in this holy month more and more.
And you know, the beauty is that you'll find that in different countries that and in different cultures, like, the practices vary, right? I've probably had, alhamdulillah, I've had the benefit of, you know, experiencing Ramadan in these 4 to 5 different countries, right? From Western countries to Arabic countries to now Iran and my own home country, which is Pakistan. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've seen, like, the different ways people are doing Ramadan, at least in these select countries.
So how is it in Pakistan?
So in Pakistan, so food is a big, big aspect of it. And unfortunately, I would say fried foods is a big part of our, you know,
like, meals or dishes.
Yeah, so you will see that, like, when we're breaking the fast, like, typically almost all the households that have similar dishes. For example, there's this
So thing. Again, the atmosphere is clear that everybody is fasting.
Yeah.
It's the holy month.
Yeah, the atmosphere is amazing, by the way, right? Mm. Like, you can feel it, like, among the people in the stores. Like,
yeah.
There's a really, really nice atmosphere. And in terms of like the foods that we have when we break our fast, there's this thing called pakoras. I don't know if you
know. Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's like made out of, it's made out of like this flour, and it has like spices in it and like, you know, onions and stuff in it. And that's like a big dish, for example, you'll find.
But it's fried.
It's fried, unfortunately. Yeah. The healthier side to it is there's this thing called fruit chaat, which is just basically a mixed fruit. It's just like mixed fruits cut up together with some juice, you know. That's a big thing. Then there's like chickpeas, you know, they're cooked in a certain style. There's this drink called Ru Afza. I don't know if you ever had it. It's like,
yeah, but what?
Have you ever been to Pakistani's house for iftar?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
You
no,
should. You should go to somebody's house for iftar, I would say, you know. Fine. Do you have any Pakistani friends?
No, Indian, yes, but Pakistani, no.
Oh, okay. It's basically like your drink. It's, I don't know why it's so popular.
So what is in that Ru Afza?
It's something, it's similar to like, I think you have something similar in Iran. It's basically, you know, you add some red.
Color? Like, is that color?
It's red colored, but it's really sweet. It has a very.
Like a syrup.
It's a very specific syrup. Yeah, that's right. So that's like one thing. I don't know. What do you have things like that in Iran? Like specific dishes that are made for iftar?
The most specific one is Zulbia Bamiye, like the sweetie things. And I guess you have it too. The Indian people and the Pakistani people have it. Do they call it jalebi, I guess?
Jalebi, yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing, but still.
Ours,
I guess ours is more beautiful.
Ours
more
is
delicious.
Unhealthier, yeah. Actually. Okay. Ours is like full of like way more sweet than the Iranian ones. And then I would say in some of the Arab countries that I've been in, you know, even there, you really do feel it's Ramadan because they'll reduce like working hours.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I remember when I was working there, like my hours would normally be, let's say, like from 9 to 5.
And they increase the number of gatherings.
Yeah.
And they gather together a lot. They invite each other for breaking their fastings.
Yes.
And they stay awake all the night, maybe together.
At least we can
say. I guess we can go for a break.
Okay.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station, and we're talking about the fascinating part of the holy month of Ramadan, which is going to be beneficial for every single individual in society, for those who are fasting and for those who are not fasting, for those who go for a spiritual aspect and for those who go for non-spiritual aspects. And we're just technically talking about the gatherings that happen in this month. And also, people are going to distribute foods to their neighbors. And to the poor people. That's also another interesting part in the holy month of Ramadan.
Yep. Like, you know, in Pakistan, the amount of free food that's distributed during Ramadan is probably like way more than the entire year, you know?
Really nice.
Yeah. You'll see like mosques and like, you know, just huge gatherings like out on the road of people like distributing food. And I know it's similar here in Iran, like, you know, you go to mosque and places, like people are distributing food and they're being charitable.
And that's so nice. It means that everybody is caring for the other person, for the other members of society who do not have enough of money or facilities to enjoy in this month.
And that's definitely part that God wants us to, right? One of the reasons we get to experience hunger is to feel other people's hunger that are having hunger.
Like what they do in here is to create some packs, and they would take it to the poor people's houses and they would distribute that, which is an interesting act.
Yeah. When we go to like our friends' houses on Eid, like the friends will also give like money to the kids.
Yeah.
And then kids are just like sitting there counting how much money they've collected.
Yes.
I remember like, you know, I didn't get a lot of like pocket money or money like during when I was growing up. And this would be like the biggest
saving.
So you
were counting on these occasions.
This would be the biggest saving of the year. You know, reading the Quran and like winning the competition at home, like finishing the Quran. My dad would give me like.
So it was a month of trade for you.
It is a month of trade. It's a month of trading with God, I would say.
Of course, okay? Of course. Literally, spiritually.
Yeah. And then. Yeah, it would be like the whole year I would spend that Eid.
Yeah.
Like that's how much money I would be able to collect. That was So all these things that we're talking about, it's reminding me of all the positive things that Ramadan,
exactly.
is, you know, throughout all the years since I've been a kid,
mm-hmm.
of the positive impact that Ramadan's had on me and it's having on us. And now my own family, now that I have my own kids, I can see that as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so beautiful for all the members of society. And just now that you mentioned kids, for them, it's a different story. Just as you mentioned it, they're going to have a lot of memories. These memories are going to turn into nostalgia. And then they would learn a lot of things from their parents, from the neighbors and everybody around. And these things are going to die deep in their wool. And then after they grow up, they would practice whatever they've learned.
Yeah. And one other beautiful thing that I really like about Iran and doing, you know, Ramadan here, is just the number of like lectures and different, you know, different religious lectures that are going on.
Yeah.
I mean, we have that back in Pakistan as well. We would have that. But over here, it's like an explosion almost, mm-hmm. I would say. There's so many different options that you get to choose from in terms of Dars Akhlaqs and like the different scholars that are giving lectures. That I find really amazing here. That's
yeah.
something that I don't find anywhere else. Like the amount of dua programs that are here being held in Iran.
So we'd keep this point for the last part. Let's go for a break, and then I have something to mention
okay,
about
sure.
the point you already
okay.
said.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is the last part of today's episode. I hope up until now you're enjoying what we're talking about. Since you mentioned the lectures that you're going through, I guess the programs that we have in television also is a good point to be mentioned. Like in television, there are many people who want to recite the Holy Book of Quran, but they either do not know, they're not educated enough to read it, or they're old people, or like even their kids, and they do not know how to read perfectly. So we have different, at different times, there are different recitation of the Holy Book of Quran in the TV.
Yeah.
We have some specialized programs for the holy month of Ramadan. Like even for those people who do not get to go out of home, there are lecturers who would talk about how to be perfectly in a good manner,
right.
how to treat other people in a good manner, like telling us about the narrations. All the programs in TV are planned to be in a way that spirituality is going
right.
to be prioritized.
You know, that reminds me of Ramadan serials as well.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenon I've noticed in almost every Muslim country. Is that during Ramadan, there'll be some like special serials being
exactly,
shown, right?
Yeah.
And in it's true in Iran as well that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I just saw that, you know, there's some new serials coming out like
exactly,
this for Ramadan.
Yeah.
So
but this year, actually, everything is different for us in Iran because our new year is coming
yes,
exactly in the
right.
holy month of Ramadan.
So Nowruz,
so,
right, is
yeah.
coming.
Some days later, I guess 7 or 8, it's going to be the new year. And then we're just finishing 10 days of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's almost like two Eids for you
exactly,
guys.
Exactly,
right?
At the same time. They're coinciding.
Yeah, yeah. And I really like Nowruz and sort of like, you know, the Eid sort of, what do you call it? The traditions that are around Nowruz. And I'm happy that it is coinciding this year. You know,
exactly.
we can kind of get to do both at the same
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah. yeah. It's fascinating. And the number of the gatherings is going to be more and more
yeah,
in
yeah.
this year.
Oh, so, you know, you're talking about those lectures on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about that before the break, is that in Iran, you find there's a huge variety of those kind of lectures. And you know what's interesting is that going on throughout the day. Like somebody was telling me there's one right now at Asr time, like around, I think, around 3 o'clock. I'll be sleeping during that time, I know for sure. But, you know, I'm surprised that they're happening at that time because there are people attending those, right? Or there's like Quran recitation at 3 o'clock, like
exactly.
from 3 to 4 p.m.,
yeah.
right? So that's really amazing that people
mm-hmm.
have that much willpower, that much energy. Oh, let me tell you one thing. So I go to karate classes right here. Well, I haven't been for a little while, but I've arranged karate classes for my kids, you know, through a coach. They want to continue having those karate classes during the fast. which is something that came as shocking to me.
Nothing would come in the middle of whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I was
nothing is an obstacle.
Like there was this teacher, I was telling him, look, like, you know, so the class finishes right around Maghrib.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you going to do about that? He's like, just tell the kids to bring something for iftar.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, like in our culture, that's not like very acceptable. Like people want to be at home or they want to be at a friend's home. But he's like, no, it's okay. It's like,
no, we had it. I actually had a class when I was about 18 years old or maybe 20, I had a class for an entire year. So it finished right at the time of the Maghrib, which was the breaking, which was the time for breaking our fasting. So just by then I came to home.
And then I had another teacher here who told me that he goes to play volleyball at like midnight, you know, like from 12 to like 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
I was like, how can you do that to yourself? But I guess that's...
They even have midnight classes.
Yeah, there's like midnight football going on, there's like midnight volleyball going on. People are having sports and
they're
classes.
They're attending their classes. They're getting to do their workouts. So everything is done normally.
Well, one last thing I want to mention is, of course, you know, we haven't mentioned in any of the episodes is the Knights of Qadr, the Knights of Power.
Of
you know,
course,
this is,
of course.
These are the nights which God says that are better than 1,000 months. And that I think I found to be very similar across all countries, that people stay up at night, you know, whether they're Sunni or they're Shia, like you'll find that that's the common sort of practice among all of us, is that we stay up all night during those last 10 nights of Ramadan, and we spend those times in worship. And that's the culmination of all of everything that we've talked about. You know, I think they culminate on those nights. And God says those help decide for the rest of the year.
Exactly, right? Which are so important of nights. But then we don't have much of time to talk about that. So this was all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And go and research these nights if you want to.
Exactly, yeah. Because they have a lot of blessings and benedictions. And there are a lot of rituals and supplications to go through in these nights. So thank you for staying with us. Until another session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israeli occupation forces press on with their genocidal war in Gaza despite the UN Security Council's call for an immediate ceasefire. Political bureau chief of the Palestinian Hamas resistance movement, Ismail Haniyeh, meets Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian during his visit to Tehran. And Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement fire rockets at Israeli targets inside the occupied territories, inflicting heavy losses.